some more. Okay, so where do I want to go this week? I want to expand on the themes that we introduced 2 weeks ago, which was week one of this unit. So areas in which we'll be focusing our conversation are, again, on this concept of visuality. Interior, exterior. What is that boundary? How do meanings get ascribed to either or both of them? How the meanings flow through the interior to the exterior and vice versa, as well as visual access to bodies. Most of us have access to the exterior. Certain select group has access to the interior. Now, in the sort of postmodern, we've got body worlds in the Mutter Museum, more and more people have access to the interior. So what does that do to the interior-exterior relationship, as well as access? One of the things that I really love that, I think you pronounce it Verlaine, I'm not sure, with the story of the body and the story of the person. It's at points a hard article to read because of the style. I don't know if it's a disciplinary thing or a native language thing or what it is. But if you can get through it, and again, see when it gets murky, just be content with the forest, not the trees, highlights so many interesting facets of this class. Number one, just the importance of stories, the way he highlights stories. We've been talking about that, people's stories, the story of chronic pain. But he extends this when he talks about sort of the ethics of anatomy, that there are stories that are important, there are stories that sick people need to tell and do tell, but there's also just stories that all bodies tell by virtue of being bodies, and there's stories that people tell, and what is the relationship between those two things? Which gets us to this idea of the ethics of anatomy and the ethics of bodily display. He makes the sort of very cogent point that in bioethics, we talk about the primacy of the person and the person's voice and the person's choices and the person's words. There is, in general, no concern about ethics in anatomy because there's no person to be seen there, that we have effectively split the story of the body from the story of the person. And if you want to talk about the display of anatomy, he says his thesis is when the story of the body is more closely related to the story of the person, that's when we have sort of greater ethical problems. And we'll talk in the context, particularly of the Body Worlds exhibit, of the more generalized ethical question of dignity of bodies and humanity, which is where most of people who are in ethics proper, when they talk about Body Worlds and other ethics display or other ethical issues in the display of anatomy and museum exhibits and those sorts of things, centers on this question of dignity. So for those of you who are taking 602 this semester, there'll be a lot of overlap there in terms of inherent value versus all the other different kinds of values that somebody can have. Okay, but to start, I want to bring us back to last week, because it's the Mutter that's going to be the catalyst for where we're going today. And because we pushed it right up to the closing of the museum, you know, we didn't have time to sit around and talk about it. I would be very surprised if people just walked in and went, well, that happened. And it's interesting because I've been there and have been there so many times that I almost now don't know what, I mean, it's like, it's hard for me to think about it because I've thought about it so often. But this trip was one of the best trips that I've taken, walking around talking to people. Some of you guys said things that I had never heard people say before. Some people asked questions that sparked future research ideas. I had one of the most exciting, sort of intellectually vibrant afternoon than I've had in a while. So it was really fun. But I want to hear just general impressions, why you think we were there for this class, questions, comments.
Just yell it out.
Why do the skulls have very strange causes of death? How did they find those?
They were bought. It was a collection from Joseph Hertel. And I don't actually know where he got all of those.
Some said suicide from a broken heart or very weird.
Yeah.
Bank robber shot by police. I thought. I was intrigued
the
by
the syphilis too. Skulls were separated from the other skulls.
And the gypsies were grouped together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think because it was supposed to be sort of a map of the human world, of the human populations. So the idea you're supposed to be able to see differences in populations, which is where people used to always sort of look with, not phrenology, but other sort of measures of humanity. So I don't know, I think they are beautiful with that beautiful script written on them, you know, with whatever acquisition number they have or what country they were from. So I apologize, it's the first question I don't actually have an answer to. Do you want me to give you a targeted question? Okay. If you were teaching a class on the ethics of public displays of anatomy, what ethics issues do you think the Mutter helps elucidate? Or, conversely, did you not see any, which is fine, sometimes I don't, ethical problems or ethical issues or ethical questions that the Mutter engenders?
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these people wore spectacles while they were alive, and now they're still spectacles when they're dead, and it just seems like there might be some ethical implications to that. Are we treating them differently, you know, their intentions, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. So partly boiling down to the question of, at least in terms of what they wanted, sort of questions of informed consent.
Yeah.
So knowing where they would be. Okay. Jeff started us off. Yes, Sam.
I think it's kind of weird that we buried Osama bin Laden in the ocean because we thought it would be, you know, what he wanted after he was dead. But all these people we just like display without having written consents from them. Mm. And that we, like, condone it as a society. Like the midget mother, or however you properly say that. I don't even know how to say it, but, like, she didn't have a written consent, but there she is for everyone to see.
Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting story about her and the skull in one of the articles that we read. For those of you,
Just along those lines, I probably missed this, but what was, like, you know, in the article, what was he arguing that it was wrong to, like, take, is this the one with, like, the arm, like, was he arguing that it was wrong to take it away, or that its initial thing was wrong, like, having it there, or?
For, like, showing her holding it or
something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he cites it with the interview with Gretchen, who said that she took it out of the mother's arms because she felt, and this is sort of fits with the theme, that she felt it was too dramatic and too emotional and too personal, too much of a story of the person, to use his terminology, and that at a medical museum it should be the story of the body.
So this is kind of like the pre-modern, modern, post-modern kind of thing, like.
Probably, it all sort of comes back
like
to that.
The modern being like, we shouldn't create a study, a story where there isn't necessarily one, we want to make this just scientific. Mm. And then postmodern maybe moving away from that. We did that a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, like, if it was too personal of a story, like, they're still giving her name. Is that not?
The author didn't tell us her name, though.
No,
right. Mm-hmm. But in the museum, like, the name is there. So, mm-hmm. But the thing about talking to Gretchen about taking the skull out of the hands because that was too personal, but the name is still there. Is that not too personal? Mm-hmm. Like, where is the line of what is too personal for a medical museum?
Mm-hmm. What's the answer to that?
Depends on who you talk to, I think.
Okay, put some theory behind that.
Personal
to who?
I mean, it's to the person or the family descendants, people that might identify with whatever's going on in the display case.
I went back to Berger. And this idea that whenever we look at anything, we're always looking at the relationship between the thing and ourselves. So this idea that it was too dramatic, it's too dramatic for the viewer. It's incongruous.
So protecting the viewer, in a way.
Perhaps, is one way that I went.
Uh-huh.
The mooter is unique in that, as far as I know, nobody has ever come back and said, that's my ancestor, take them off display. There's a exhibit opening soon down in Baltimore. They have the remains of a gentleman. They know his name. He was a slave. He was purchased by a local physician who preserved his skeleton after his death and used it in his, this was at the time right around the Mütter Museum. And there's some debate about putting his remains on display now. In, you know, sort of post-Henrietta Lacks, it's in the same sort of general area. And what's one of their main questions is, who gets to speak for this person? You know, we haven't found descendants. But there is an active community in that area of Baltimore that is speaking for him. And so the museum curators are trying to figure out, whose voice do we listen to here? You know, at the cause of humanity, which is sort of the subtitle of the Mütter Museum. For the cause of humanity, was what Thomas Mütter said when he donated his collection. Anyway, we got on that because of the personalness. Yes, let's keep going. Mm-hmm.
So, I still don't understand what's interesting about this. I understand the original purpose of using such a collection for teaching medical students or continuing education physicians. But it's not exactly an exhibition about the human body. It's about differences, extreme differences in human body.
It's about pathology and anatomy.
Yes, but not in general. It's about the differences, right? There's no normal bodies there. They're all displayed to present something that is different, so we can compare.
Right. "Quote unquote normal anatomy" is hidden away because, although there was some normal anatomy there, in terms of systems and things and the eyes. Is the eye exhibit still out there?
No, that's not.
Not the eye diseases, but the models.
Oh.
Fetuses looked like it was more like an embryological display, but different.
Aren't the skeletons that are hanging too, where you can like, just the ones where you like can discern sex or something like that? Those would be like normal.
Mm-hmm. Which. We're picking. I think there's a greater point that Hilo's probably trying to make, but it is a museum of pathology, and they've consciously made decisions to show the extreme ranges, which is how they would say it.
So it was hard to be there and read the labels and not think of those displays as people, and which maybe I shouldn't have read the labels. Because I couldn't go past reading the labels and thinking about the fact that this was a person, a 17-year-old, a 21-year-old, and so on. So that was helping me to process. And also my training is to look at different bodies, not in a way that, I mean, acknowledge the difference, somewhat even celebrate it, but not look at the difference in a different way than the modern museums try to do, I think.
Let me ask you, is the problem, I mean, is it something inherent in how the museum is displaying it, or is it more just the fact that it's being displayed?
Oh, the fact that it's being displayed.
Okay. But where does the attribution of entertainment come from?
The fact that it's open to the public. It's not it's not designated anymore to a group of experts or experts in training. It's for everyone.
Okay.
So it's... So I think that makes it an entertainment.
Okay.
People go there for entertainment. They don't go there to learn about different eye diseases anymore, do they?
So many do. Or they don't go for that purpose, but they come out having learned something.
So you can watch a movie and learn something, but you still go there. You go to watch a movie for entertainment. So maybe there's an added value or benefit, or you learn something, but the purpose of going there is not to learn about things. It's to be entertained in a way, in a fiction way, I think.
All right. I saw a whole bunch of people, like, were listening to you, and they would look at me. They'd listen to you, they'd look at me. Which generally means that a lot of people have something to say. No, this is a perfect conversation spark. Come on, people.
So movies are often made for entertainment, and museums are often set up for education. So that's one big difference between the two genres, that museums aren't always there as entertainment, that they can be set up as an educational tool. And if people go there for entertainment, that's different than going to something for entertainment that was made for entertainment.
You should write your third paper on, like, why the Natural Academy of Sciences is fundamentally different from the Lunar Museum.
So
that'd be a cool paper.
If the exhibition at the Lunar Museum did not change from the time it was set for a group of people, for experts, but the purpose change or the audience change, doesn't it change? Isn't there a gap between the original purpose and the original setting to the current audience, to the current educational mission? To answer my question, are there supposed to be changes if you change the audience, or if you change your educational purpose or value or goal?
Anybody.
It seems like you're setting up in the question that I'm not sure. Like, did they change their purpose? Like, did they change the purpose of the museum over time, or did they just try to adapt it for people that were coming?
I would say the latter.
Okay. Because they did go to a bigger space, and they did update the displays, and they did start charging a fee to be able to support...
Mm-hmm. Other education. I mean, the money does support a lot of the college. The college has the largest collection of incunabula, I love that word, books published before the invention of the printing press, than any other institution in the United States. It's gorgeous. It has four stories of books and early journals. It has old tipped in, which just means that they taped photographs into the book, medical and surgical reviews. They're amazing. And it has a ghost, which is kind of cool. They have the vaccines history website. They have a public place where anybody can come in and ask medical questions. It's sort of like a live WebMD. Like, somebody can come in and sort of get help doing online research about the condition, the treatment, the side effects, the resources in the city, that kind of thing. Okay, so coming back, Gretchen always claimed that it was always education. She didn't care why people came, because she knew they would leave having learned something. And she didn't put a definition on what she thought they were going to learn. If it was just from, oh my God, look what can go wrong. I had no idea that human anatomy could be this variable, to someone who was studying the Harry Eastlack disease.
So if that's the case, then something that might support what you're saying is, so I mentioned to you about the line of fetuses. So
I love that.
Did anybody else notice that the fetal skeletons, they were standing? Like, as we stand, but fetuses don't ever stand. They're always, like, in the fetal position. So are they displayed like that for entertainment? Or are they displayed so that you can better see what it looks like, what we're used to seeing, a skeleton sort of upright? It's not its natural position.
I mean, you could have a practical argument that that's the best way to see all the different...
Right. That if you fold it up, then you can... Mm-hmm.
To see, like, oh, like, the femur getting bigger. And mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think it's a larger question, what is the educational purpose? What are you supposed to learn? Because mm-hmm. I think museum will have a clear purpose or a clear goal. Mm-hmm. Objections, no? To what they want their audience to learn or get out after the visit. I'm not clear about... Definitely
just me, but
I was not clear what is the educational experience I'm supposed to have.
Mm-hmm. And then the educational
entertainment
thing.
It's
entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
The educational aspect is not clear.
Okay.
At Walter Reed, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
At Walter Reed, they have nothing as I think, as well presented as what the Motor Museum is, but they have a huge history of military medicine, mm-hmm. and you know, it's not open to the public really. I mean, it is, I guess, to a certain extent. If you were to get on there and find
it's hard to find though,
and go in, right? But, I mean, so it's kind of like one of those hidden secrets. They don't advertise it. They don't have, you know, there's mm-hmm. no public face to it. But it has, it's very similar to this mm-hmm. museum. But when you're talking about it being for entertainment, I think it's far more than that. I think certainly there are going to be some that are going to go with a real, you know, grotesque sense of humor, who will go and poke fun and laugh and joke. But I think that in a lot of ways, there's probably people who go through this museum who have stirred inside of them a desire to become a physician or to understand more. I think where we become uncomfortable with it is when it becomes too personal. I mean, who wouldn't want to go see Albert Einstein's brain, right? I mean, I don't think anybody would have a hard time with that or would struggle with that. Mm-hmm. That's something very personal. But then when we see a crushed skull of a preborn fetus, whether it's in the mother's arm or hand or laying on the floor, you know, or some of the... I didn't go to the museum, unfortunately. I read all the articles on it, and I'm kind of wish... Part of me wishes I did. Part of me... was that plastic, you know, that whole, what was the article about?
Oh, no, there's no plastinated
yeah,
face.
I would not wanted to see that personally. And so, you know, for me, my struggle, having had so much exposure to traumatic body injury and death in, you know, different combat situations, I'd be more sensitive maybe than a lot of people to some of the displays, but still the wonder of the human body, and, you know, I'm not a physician, never will be one, but to be intrigued by that, to me it's interesting. My struggle is how do you present the person? You know, I think there's a line in which we present a person where we retain some sense of, you know, dignity or respect in a way, but how do you know, you can't guarantee what individuals are going to do. I think that's my point, is this is connected to the College of Physicians of Philadelphia. I think there's a valid, real, educational, you know, informative purpose for the mm-hmm. Yet some are going to take it and twist it, you know.
And as Erin McCleary wrote in her article, you know, it's not just education about the body, it's also commemorative to medical history, it's a preservation center.
And that's what the hospital at Walter Reed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Casey.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that, like, the example of her making a decision to, like, put the... like skull on the ground rather than like in the woman's arm, like kind of as a testament to like more of an education like purpose rather than like entertainment, because you know if they wanted to kind of like appeal to like what people might think or set up a story, like not only was the thinking like, oh, this doesn't belong in like a medical museum, but it was kind of like let's not put on a story that wasn't necessarily true. I mean, this lady was never like a mother to like a live like baby that like, so I think putting it as such would kind of like fabricate something, like make up a story. And it seems like that decisions avoiding like that, I don't know, for me at least, that like gives testament to that education purpose. But I definitely do see your point, and I definitely, especially with like the gift shop, I don't know, that's one of the only like places in which I'm like, oh wait, like maybe this is kind of, I don't know.
Okay.
Just you can have any intention you want, but if something ends up something else in practice, then I think that's probably more along the lines of what it actually is. And you know, I've lived in Greater Philadelphia all my life, and whenever I've put up the Mutter Museum, it's been Mutter Museum, but it's always been in the context of, have you seen that? It's crazy, you know, like it's a spectacle for most intents and purposes, you know.
Which is why we go in Unit 3 and not in Unit 1, partly.
Right. So, I mean, it may be intended for educational value, but I think, you know, that's outweighed by its spectacleness.
Is anybody going to ask the question of whether or not those two things are mutually exclusive?
No. Wait,
what do you say about movies, though? I mean, movies can be both entertaining and a spectacle. I mean, a spectacle and an educational.
Yeah, Olivia.
The other thing is that it's this idea, the idea that because it's open to the public, it's spectacle, but before when it was just doctors, that there wasn't, that it wasn't, like my image of what it was before, like sure, it had it carried the message of, you know, being educational and scientific, but it was, you know, like a bunch of guys with cigars and brandy hanging around, you know, looking at their, you know,
that's the biggest tumor I ever took out.
Yeah. And so it was as much spectacle, just who, you know, the spectator was, and, you know, that's different now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, should one person have, you know, one group of people have the privilege of having that experience, whether they whether it's taken educationally or, you know, sensationally over another group having.
But in med school now, I think there is a level of spectacle associated with, because a first year med student is the same as us in many respects. You know, they're walking and seeing dead bodies for the first time. They're, you know, kids are still getting in trouble for posting pictures on Facebook of holding up body parts, you know, when they're on their surgical rotations. So, I want to continue this idea of, is part of the issue who gets to see it? And this does tie into this trajectory that Garland Thompson makes, Berylyn makes, we've made, and, you know, this idea that there is some societal shift which is having an impact on how we look at the somatic, sort of the somatic-societal relationship. And I read this quote at when we were there last week. I talked to her for an hour and 10 minutes. She was just the coolest, funnest interview that I've really ever done. Because, I mean, the quote makes her sound a little silly, maybe. But, and that's, I mean, it's just, it's like all of that in one, you know, two or three sentences, which she would talk about for 10 minutes. But this idea that part of what makes this fascinating, and ambiguous in the sense of you're drawn to it, you're repulsed by it at the same time, the true sort of ambiguous, is that we don't get to see these sorts of things in live people anymore. And only until very recently have we been able to see them on a specimen level. And this was the question that I posed last week, talking about how incredible we are as a society about hiding away difference in, you know, elder homes. You know, we don't have a good system to integrate elder care into normal communities. We segregate physical and mental mentally challenged individuals, the dying. We segregate this very, very well. And up until recently, there was this gatekeeper role, gatekeeping by the professions. And I'm wondering, and I just sort of thought of the question this afternoon and haven't had a chance to think about it too much, but if you look at the time, and there was so segregated institutions, the time that the internet starts to sort of take off and global communications start to take off and the idea that you can almost see anything from anywhere is about the same time that the Mütter starts to gain popularity. It's about the same time that Body World starts touring around. So the hypothesis that I wanted to play with was, is there something that, you know, that the gatekeepers can no longer keep the gates. Segregated institutions can no longer bar the doors from people seeing things. And is there something here to arise a renewed interest in, you know, sort of freak shows or anatomy exhibits? You know, because Body Worlds and all its offshoots have been referred to as freak shows. The Mütter Museum has been referred to as a freak show. It is looking at difference because of the difference. So if we're talking about this the trajectory from, you know, pre-modern to modern to postmodern, perhaps we need a new category. So put that in the back of your mind. And then the question I posed was, is there a penalty, and are Mütter and the Body World sort of a consequence of the of this removing, isolating, and medicalizing the extraordinary? You know, in the same way when we were reading about syphilis imagery being sort of superimposed onto AIDS imagery, that is there something societally that needs these physical manifestations of difference through which to make attributions, through which to make themselves feel better, all the different theories you could throw out there. So that as, you know, when freak shows disappeared, we still had that desire. Some people would say it's a prurient desire. Other people would say there is something broadening and comforting and provocative and educational, you know, about the desire to view and confront disfigurement. So is it sort of that the Mütter and Body Worlds sort of rose up at the time in which the need was there, but there was no place to put the need? You know, we might have tried to put it on talk shows, we might have tried to put it on conjoined twins operations, but there's something here that fits. That was it in hiding them away? Was that part of what made them freaks? You know, so they're hidden, we bring them out, we realize we can't display them, we hide them again. Years go by, more and more people start to see them, we bring them out again. Is Body World sort of cresting? Is Body World going to sort of had its heyday? Is Von Hagen's our contemporary Barnum? Okay, so I want to explore those questions through the Mütter Museum and Body Worlds. So, and again, interrupt me at any time. I'm just going to kind of keep barreling through, so. So, 1849 is when the College of Physicians started its collection of pathological anatomy, but it was 1856 with Mütter and Thomas Dent Mütter endowed his collection with 1,700 items and said, you know, free and always open to the public. That was a stipulation in 1856. It wasn't, I'm going to give you these just for the fellows of the college. It was, I'm going to give these for, and that's where they get their logo, which unfortunately now I'm blanking on, to further the cause of medicine and humanity, something like that. If those of you who have your browsers open, it's like the Mütter Museum.
Right here. I'm not sure if this is a statement. Advances the cause of health while upholding the ideals and heritage of the medicine, college tries to enable individuals, families. Is that the statement?
It's in the gist of it, but it was one of Mütter's quotes that they sort of highlight. But the gist of it is, for the cause of medicine and humanity. Open to the public, free and open to the public. So unlike, you know, sort of the barns, you know, could never move, and it actually moved, there wasn't much of a fight. They said, we need some money, let's charge admission. It's no longer free. So it's around during the 1883 Anatomy Act, which created a particular board in the state to administer the, quote, distribution and use of unclaimed human bodies for scientific purposes. So bodies are huge, you know, around this time. It was very small for most of its history. You know, sort of, it turned commemorative very early on. In fact, as part of my dissertation, I went through the tables of contents of every issue of the Transactions of the College of Physicians for references to the Mutter Museum, and it was very clear how quickly it became a commemorative body. You know, it was... The transactions start out with sort of like a JAMA type thing. You know, they had presentations at the college which were the cutting edge of surgery or anatomy or medical practice cases, that kind of thing. And now it is more like what it is today. They have a division of medical history. They have a division of arts and medical humanities. Photographs all became photographs of the physicians as they were retiring. And one of the things we were talking about as we were going through is the museum is still donated to today by every type of person you could imagine, by retiring physicians, which is sort of the tradition, but also by general people who may either know they had a weird condition and said, you know what, I don't know actually how the conversation went, which is would be an interesting study to interview people, why were they, you know, family members, why was this donation made? But if you looked at some of the tags in the Mutter Room, 2010, 2011, contemporary donations of just non-exceptional pathologies. So objects, photographs, and specimens. To the functions of education, preservation, and commemoration. So my question is, and this is sort of where Jeff was going earlier, although he sort of answered it, but there might be some other answers. This is where we started. If these objects were, and I think we could probably all say, when they were donated, when they were collected, the body was a specimen. Has that body shifted to something else in this transformation? Is that a bug or a hand? Okay. people get very poetic about the Mutter. It has been called the sanctuary of the misshapen, a repository of the extraordinary. But what happens when it is stripped of the medically educated viewer? Does it become a spectacle? But what's also interesting, and what makes me want to answer this question in the negative, is more so than body worlds, and we can talk about this, Gretchen always said, and other people have said, in other museums, you go to look at things. At the Mutter Museum, the objects look back at you. And you can take that literally in the fact that, you know, there's actually, you know, you're looking at skeletons with some with fake eyes. But also this idea that because it has to do with humanity and we are all frail human beings, in some way, they are looking back on us. They're looking back on us through our own lenses, which is where we sort of this idea of it's too personal. It's too personal because it makes us think too much of ourselves. It's not personal to the object. It's personal to the viewer. And again, these are just... This was so great about this stuff is there's no, you know, like, if this is exactly what Kant meant when he said this. You have to know exactly what I mean when Kant said this. It's not that kind of class. It's here's how I interpret the Mutter. It's a social phenomenon. Let's think about what it means. So, questions of what is our relationship to the things that we're looking at? Is there, and this is why I said to Hila, you know, that it would be sort of an interesting paper to write, comparing natural history museums with animals on display, and those sorts of kind of museums with sort of the Mutter in the context of education and entertainment. And you go look at the Franklin Institute, which has come out and said they are edutainment. That's in their, I don't know if it says anymore, but it used to be in their publicity. Edutainment. It's a great term. Okay. I want to jump to body worlds, but I want to pause here in case anybody has anything else they want to say. I mean, we're going to come back to the Mutter because we're going to kind of talk about the two of them together, but yeah.
I was going to say something about the Natural History Museum with, you know, looking at animals, and I almost wonder if just based on whether or not, you know, you had a PETA activist going in there and, like, whether, you know what I mean, if that would, if there would be any difference in how somebody who's that animal or pro-animal reacted to the, I mean, would they have the same reaction to the Mutter, you know, where this is just horrible and a complete devastation of life, or, I mean, I don't know, it's just interesting that I feel there's probably more reaction to natural museum or natural history museums, like negative reaction, than there is to the Mutter, and I wonder if that has something to do with our fascination of the freakness of it all. No.
That's, which goes back to all those questions we asked in Unit 1 about the fascination with ourselves. So it's not just, ooh, look at that. It's, ooh, what is that? And what does that make me think about me?
Yeah.
Right, well, I'm going to assume that all of you have some sort of answer in your head. Because if you don't, get one. Because I think it's interesting and may help us solidify our thoughts on this when we look at body worlds. Which, has anybody been to the body worlds or any of its offshoots? In this case, right now, it doesn't really matter. Bodies, the exhibit. Yeah. So, no, you're the only one in the class, Lizzie?
Back in high school. I went twice, I think.
Nobody else has been?
No, I've been.
Two people? Sorry. My voice went up. So, Lizzie and Casey, can you tell the group in your own words, and I'll show some pictures in a minute, what is it?
So, they're plastinated bodies, and I think the majority of them, you know, they're kind of stripped down, made of human skin, and they're posed in a way to make them look like they're being active, like soccer player, I think I remember. And
yeah.
I don't know, I remember going in there and they almost don't look human. Mm. Like they don't look like they were ever real people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it was years ago.
Yeah, mine was too. I was also in high school. And I remember that they had a lot of like athletes like sort of like posing, and it seemed sort of artistic or something.
Yeah. And then there was also a pregnant woman, right?
Yes. With behind some velvet robes.
Yeah, and that was kind of
Were you at the Mutter last week?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Did you have that same thought when you viewed the things at the Mutter, that they almost weren't human?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm. Most people don't. Yeah. Which is so fascinating because plastination is a almost perfectly preserved, as opposed to just a part. I don't know, there's so much fun stuff to think about. So yes, well, I think I put this too soon. Let's look at it.
I find it interesting that I've never been to Body Worlds, but everyone I've ever heard talk about it talks about the pregnant woman.
Yeah. What do they say about it?
Like, there was this pregnant woman. Like,
now that's a spectacle.
Yes, absolutely.
Have you seen it, Ori?
Yes.
Body.
Yes, I saw it at the Franklin. So here's the front page. Doesn't actually have a lot of photos on the main site. But he's got sort of a prelude. And the exhibitions are not photographs of the different exhibitions. It's advertising of where the exhibitions are. And they're all over the world. Here's where you can talk about how you want to, if you don't donate your body. The process of plastination. Von Hagens. The Institute for Plastination. Media request. And store. Look at the images on the store. Particularly given I just say SS because whatever her name is, Shelter Schlutz, or this is how I read novels too. I shorten everyone's name in the book to like their first initial. So people say, well, what's the main character's name? I'm like, I have no idea. SS. So her article, it's a woman, which I find interesting, particularly considering her arguments about gender and consumerism. In the prelude, it's a little, let's show this little, I have a lot of little videos, so. Oh, I'm not plugged in. I love the ads, too. When I was looking at this earlier, it was all ads for, like, knee replacement or, like, medical centers.
That's Google, though, that spies on what you're looking at and then throws ads in.
I know. I find that, yes. All right. So one of the things... Let's look at some pictures, and I have another video because the article talks a lot about differences between the European and the American experience. That, you know, in Europe, where it opened and started, it was in, like, exhibition halls, like convention center halls with trees and fountains and, you know, all those sort of natural features that you would have in these exhibition halls. And in one of the videos we're going to watch, you can see people, like, literally, you know, at Body Worlds and things, they were mostly behind glass. But here's, you know, someone like this, and people are, like, walking under the arm of these plastinated figures. So it's quite a distinct experience, and lots of controversies in Europe. Not so much here, so we'll talk about why that is. And wondering if there's an analogy to be made to how Europeans are concerned about genetically modified organisms and foods, and we don't care. They would say it's just because we're crass. But you can definitely see in some of his exhibits the allure to past art and anatomy. There's the flayed man. And he's recreated it. The sports... there's the pregnant lady. But you can see sort of in her reclining position. I don't know, those of us in the room have been pregnant. I've never laid around like that when I was pregnant. You know. Horses and animals. You can kind of see here in the background how people were sort of wandering around it. Athletics. Playing poker. In fact, in the latest James Bond movie... the one with Daniel Craig, when he's running through wherever he's running through, there's a big exhibit in the background. There's a banner in the background for the Body Worlds exhibit with the poker players. Before we talk any more about the ethics of this, we need to know more about what it is. So this first video is a little bit long, but worth it because it's just sort of amazing. It's also, for someone who spent 4 years in the basement of the Mütter, this one kind of makes me go, ugh. So, a little bit of a warning. If you have to, you can watch parts of it like this, and we'll tell you when it's clear. Oh, and you're going to love the Kurdish medical... Sorry. It kind of takes away from the gravitas of the situation to have to watch a Spamalot commercial.
I am on a crusade to rescue Neil from routine with the glorious Spam.
Break the monotony.
I'm serious.
Spamalot's crusade at Spam.com.